from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Next on Forum, the Trump administration yesterday announced restrictive new rules for migrants seeking asylum at the U.S. border. Immigrant advocates say the changes will essentially block all Central American migrants fleeing persecution and poverty in their countries from entering the United States. And then at 10:30, Facebook's controversial cryptocurrency project, Libra, is the subject of congressional hearings today and tomorrow. The Trump administration has come out strongly against the digital currency, saying it could be misused by terrorists and money launderers. We'll discuss the latest, and that's all next after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. A plan by the Trump administration that goes into effect today says that migrants who want to be eligible for immigration to the U.S. must apply for asylum in the first country they pass through en route to the U.S. We're going to discuss the so-called third country rule and how it will affect immigrants from Central America. Joining us is Alan Gomez. He's immigration reporter for USA Today. Alan Gomez, welcome to the program. Good morning.
Thanks for having me back, Michael.
Glad to have you back. Also glad to have Stephen Legomski with us. Stephen Legomski, excuse me, is professor at Washington University School of Law. He's former chief counsel of U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, the Immigration Services Agency in the Department of Homeland Security. And Professor Legomski, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. And let me begin, if I may, Alan Gomez, with you. What this seems to do, well, I mean, let's flesh it out a bit, but the practical effect of this would be actually to end asylum requests for those who are going to try to get into any kind of asylum situation, period.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, the practical effect is to pretty much end asylum as we know it. The vast majority of people who are approaching that southwest border right now, some 93% of family units, some 85% of unaccompanied minors, are all coming from Central America. So that means they've either passed through Guatemala or all of them passed through Mexico on their way to the United States. And what this new rule would say is that if you pass through one of those countries and you did not apply for asylum there, you are restricted, you're barred, you're cut off from requesting asylum in the United States. So it would cut it off for all those people.
And Alan, you mentioned both Mexico and Guatemala. At this point, neither one of them is technically on board, though Mexico is saying if this comes down as a fiat from President Trump, there's really little they can do. And Guatemalan head of state was supposed to meet with President Trump or meet with his administration, but that was canceled.
Yeah, it gets, you know, I'm sure Professor Legomski can get into the legality of this, but generally speaking, there is a portion of U.S. law that allows the U.S. to designate another country as a, quote, safe third country. And in that case, asylum seekers on their way to the United States would have to make an asylum request there. But under U.S. law and under international treaties that the U.S. is party to, we have to agree with that third country that they are a safe third country. We've been trying to negotiate. This administration has been trying to negotiate an agreement with Guatemala and Mexico to render them safe third countries that could legally accept these asylum seekers, but neither of those countries have accepted that. So this is basically a move by the Trump administration to say, well, fine, we're not going to go by that part of U.S. law. We're going to change another part of U.S. law and just unilaterally declare that, no, you have to apply in those other countries. Otherwise, you cannot apply for asylum in this country. So this is something that is probably going to be challenged in court as early as today. And we expect a pretty quick ruling from a federal judge when and if that lawsuit is filed.
Well, the ACLU has already come into this legally. And Professor Legomski, let's talk about this. I mean, it would seem on the face of it to run against some serious legal hurdles and litigation, not only national problems, but international.
No, I think that's right, and I think Alan said it exactly right. To be fair to the administration, there is a provision in the law which says that the Secretary of Homeland Security has the power to impose, quote, additional conditions and limitations, unquote, on people applying for asylum. But that same provision goes on to include a critical qualifier, and the qualifier is those conditions have to be consistent with the rest of the asylum statute. Well, right now, the asylum statute says that anybody who is physically present in the U.S., meaning either the border area or the interior, has the right to apply for asylum. And there are only two situations the law allows in which the possibility of getting protection somewhere else bars you from asylum. One of those is the one Alan had mentioned. If there is a safe third country treaty, then that is a possibility. But as Alan has pointed out, the U.S. has not entered into such a treaty with any of the relevant countries. In fact, the only country we have such a treaty with at the moment is Canada. So that exception doesn't apply. And the only other situation is where the person is, quote, firmly resettled, unquote.
This would mean, in effect, a disaster in human rights, though. So that's why I brought in the international rulings in terms of human rights protections. But I believe I'm looking actually at a statement from you, Professor, where you say the practical effect and the admitted intention of the regulation is to virtually eliminate asylum claims by the Central American refugees who are fleeing from rape, murder, and other horrific violence in their home countries. You have the head of the Justice Department, though, Attorney General Barr, who is saying, in effect, we're overwhelmed. We've got an approaching number that is in the hundreds of thousands. He used the word, unfortunately, aliens at the southern border. And so you get into not only a legal question here, but you get into questions of sustainability and what can actually be done, because that's what the Trump administration is arguing. They can't withhold the numbers. They can't deal with the numbers.
Well, I appreciate that it's a tough situation for the administration. The numbers are very large. They're not the largest in history, though. They were much larger in 2000, almost twice as great. And we were able to deal with that situation back then in the same way we always deal with asylum seekers who appear at the border, and that's to make sure we devote enough resources to adjudicating these individual cases. Those who are found eligible for asylum are granted it. Those who are denied asylum can then be removed to the countries they came from. But the key here is that an individual on the merits determination is required when a person says, don't send me back because my life is being threatened.
And Alan Gomez, what about the argument we're also hearing from the administration that migrants are gaming the system? They're missing their hearings dates. They're not even showing up in many cases. Actually, I think that the numbers give the lie to that to a great degree. But for the most part, that's a lot of what we're hearing from the Trump administration.
Yeah, I mean, we could dedicate a whole other show to the data that the administration uses. They claim that the vast majority of these folks claiming asylum do not appear, even appear for their asylum hearings, yet data from Syracuse University that does an amazing job of tracking immigration court cases show that actually the vast majority of these folks who are coming across now are at least appearing for their court hearings. But more broadly speaking, yeah, this has been their line since the beginning of the administration, that our asylum laws, that our refugee laws are being taken advantage of. And this, what they're doing here is definitely the biggest attempt to limit asylum, but it is just the latest attempt to do so. I can run you through just a half dozen examples of situations of what they've tried to do to limit asylum. They've tried to cut off asylum for victims of domestic abuse and gang violence. That was blocked by a federal judge. They tried to block immigrants who entered the country illegally from requesting asylum, even though U.S. law clearly states that you can do that. That was also blocked by a federal judge. One of the ones that has endured, though, is this Remain in Mexico plan, where they ruled that any of these Central Americans who were coming across and requesting asylum must return to Mexico and await their court hearing in Mexico. That was initially blocked by a federal judge. It was finally upheld by an appeals court. And so what we have now are tens of thousands of Central Americans who make their application in the United States are then going back to these Mexican border towns to wait for the outcome. There's been other attempts that they've tried to limit asylum, but as I said, this is just one part, although the biggest, of their attempts to limit or in some cases completely halt the asylum system as we know it.
So, Stephen Langosky, can you help us understand when and how this would go into effect? It's a rule that was put out and now it's essentially going to be challenged, as we said earlier, legally. But what's the trajectory likely here?
Well, it's an interim regulation, which means that it would go into effect immediately, meaning today, unless a court steps in and blocks it. I personally think that the case, the legal case against it is so strong that a court will block it very quickly and that it will never go into effect. But until that happens, then it would go into effect immediately. And also, could I echo what Alan has said about how this really is just part and parcel of the administration's stated goal, which is to keep the admission of refugees and the grant of asylum to an absolute minimum. In addition to all of those examples, there are still others, the separation of children from their families to deter people from coming, the mass detention of children. One that really amazes me is that at the same time they were saying we won't consider your asylum claim if you enter irregularly, they were also engaged in a practice called metering, which means that if you apply at a regular port of entry, we'll take only a few cases per day, and in the meantime, you wait in Mexico. And they were criminally prosecuting the parents. They were discouraging asylum officers from even finding what is called a credible fear, which is just the preliminary showing that you have to make simply to get a hearing on your asylum claim. And of course, they were also threatening the already impoverished home governments with a cutoff of their aid in order to pressure them into cutting off these people's escape routes when they try to flee from violence. And now all of that is on top of the slashing of the number of overseas refugee admissions to the lowest level in the history of our refugee program. So this is a very serious situation.
It is serious indeed, and it's also a time for me to invite those of you listening to let us know and weigh in on your thoughts about it or any questions you might have. We're talking with Stephen Langowski, who is a professor at Washington University School of Law and former chief counsel of U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, and with Alan Gomez, immigration reporter for USA Today. We invite your calls, and you can join us now at our toll-free number. The number to call is 866-733-6786, so please feel free to be part of the program. This is a half-hour segment, so if you have something you'd like to say or weigh in on here, or if you have a question, now would be the time, again, for you to call. And again, the number, 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions or comments you might have to forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment, and indeed, we invite you to be a part of this. I'm struck, again, by William Barr's role in all this. I'd like to hear, Stephen Langowski, what you have to say about this, because, you know, to some extent, he's been the president's point man, not only with respect to the Mueller report, but, you know, he's the highest legal officer in the land, and he's using words like aliens and so forth. But putting that aside, or notwithstanding that, to a great extent, it seems to be maybe the brainchild of Stephen Miller and that's operating here along with Bill Barr.
I think that's right. People like Stephen Miller and William Barr would not be able to do this unless the president were empowering them to do so. So I think this does have to be located at the top of the hierarchy. It's really a group of people who I think within the administration are very much on board with these policies.
And some thoughts from you, Alan Gomez. Actually, I'd like to get some thoughts from you before we go to our callers here about the ICE raids, which didn't quite occur to the great dissatisfaction many people in the Trump administration may have. I mean, they didn't turn out to, although, again, once again, President Trump is talking about big numbers and so forth. What's the reality of what we saw with those ICE raids?
So far, a whole lot of nothing. It's been very strange. We heard from the administration very clearly last week that they were going to start, the president himself. It was a strange chain of events where ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, said that they would not broadcast what they were doing, that doing so would put their agents in danger by broadcasting when and where they would be doing these massive ICE raids. And then a couple of days later, the president says they're going to start on Sunday, and his head of USCIS explains exactly who they're going to be going after. So that's what led us to Sunday. So everybody was bracing for it. Everybody was waiting for it. And then this week has been just a very, very slow trickle. We're hearing some reports of some ICE activity in places like Houston, outside of Atlanta, and Minnesota, a couple cases in New York. but I can tell you that our network has had reporters across the country watching for this. Other media organizations have been watching this very closely. Immigration advocates, lawyers, volunteers all across the country are watching very closely for this, and we're only getting reports of just handfuls of ICE arrests here and there. So we don't know if ICE just kind of decided to slow things down because of all the publicity and all the media, and they knew that any arrest that they would make would just they'd be swarmed by reporters and it would be all over the news, or if they're just kind of taking their time with this. But as of right now, we just don't see any big numbers of people being arrested, and we haven't gotten any confirmation from ICE about what they are doing or what they are not doing right now.
Well, I raised the question yesterday, and I'll let it just stand for the moment again. Why would they telegraph the fact that they're doing this? It would seem like it would be more efficacy to it if they just did it. But let me get some callers on, and let's go first to you, Stephen. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael. Another excellent show. I was just wondering, why can't we fully fund a process in the country of origin for asylum seekers that's in compliance with international law, that gives preference for them so that we avoid the caravans, we avoid the whole trek across third countries, and adjudicate their dispute, their requests for asylum, you know, in Honduras, in Guatemala, so that they don't have to make the trek and still respect their rights?
Stephen, thank you for that question. Let me defer to you here, Professor Legowski.
Yeah, that's a great question. Let me say first that historically we have had programs like that in the past. We had a very large program like that in Southeast Asia after the Vietnam War. We also had a very large program like that within the former Soviet Union, where people actually were processed for refugee status in country. In addition to that, the Obama administration did do precisely that. They set up in-country processing in some of the Central American countries from which the refugees were fleeing. The Trump administration has ended that program. Now, in fairness, there is one big deficiency with that idea, and that is that people can be in danger even going to the U.S. consulate or embassy within their countries in order to apply, because the criminal gangs that are targeting them, the husbands who are domestically abusing their wives and their partners and their children, know where the embassies and consulates are and can be lying in wait. So there is some danger, but nonetheless, it's probably a lesser danger than having to make that very difficult trek all the way through Central America and Mexico.
Let me thank Stephen for his call. And a tweet here, let me go to you on this, if I may, Alan. Listener wants to know, does this mean that only Mexicans and Canadians can apply for asylum? This is insane. And another listener says, how does this new rule apply to immigrants who fly to the U.S.? Now, you can, I guess, might bring in the C as another way of considering what the rule is going to apply. I guess people can come by C now, at least to some extent, can't they? What about air?
Yeah, I mean, each of those cases provides very different situations. I mean, I think mostly we'd see people applying for asylum or folks coming from Cuba, Haiti, places in the Caribbean like that. We do see some of that. Some of these folks come on boats from Mexico, but for the most part, the vast majority of these folks, right, are coming across that southern border. And as the tweeter rightfully points out, yeah, basically, if you're either Mexican trying to and you approach the border, you would be allowed to request asylum. But if you're anything else, if you're from Central America, if you're from the increasing number of African nations, people are coming from over there and making it to South or Central America and making that trek. A lot of Cubans, a lot of Haitians are taking that route where they're going to Central and South America, and they're making that trek up through Central America and through Mexico. And yeah, all of those would effectively be barred from making any kind of asylum request here. So, yeah, it pretty much limits it to those two.
Another listener wants to know, and let me go to you on this, Professor Legowski. I'm curious about how this affects anybody coming in who has family here already. Are they not allowed to join their families?
Well, this regulation affects only those who are applying for asylum. It doesn't have any effect on people who otherwise independently qualify for immigration based on their family connections. As a practical matter, though, that accounts for only a small percentage of the people who are actually coming from Central America.
Yeah, and let me go to another caller, and that's you, Sam. Thanks for waiting. Join us.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. The question and slash comment that I have is, President Trump has in the past said that he wants to encourage immigration from countries such as Norway or other European countries. So in light of his recent comments about the Democratic Congresswoman asking them to go back to where they came from, how do you view his policies with respect to Europeans or white people applying for asylum versus colored people applying for asylum?
Alan Gomez, can you respond?
I mean, I think we've all learned that it's very hard to get into the head of this president and figure out exactly where he's coming from with a lot of these. But the practical effect of a lot of these policies, if we go back to the travel ban that was mostly targeting countries where the vast majority of people were Muslim, now these policies obviously affect Central Americans mostly. So most of the efforts that he's taken, there's not been any sort of policy change enacted by this administration that has really cracked down on Irish immigration.
Well, no, from Northern but Europe. All those efforts have been defeated in the courts.
Yes, exactly. So it's everything, the result, the ones that are going into place, the policies that they're rolling out have mostly targeted people who are trying to come here as refugees, as asylees, or trying to use other legal means to get into this country, and all of those happen to be from Central America, from South America, from the Caribbean, from Africa, from Asia, and from other places like that.
Here's a question, and let me go to you on this again, Stephen Legomsky, from a listener named Kelly, who says, I'm a moderate Democrat and very empathetic, to immigrants and asylum seekers, but honestly, it doesn't sound reasonable to ask asylum seekers to apply in Mexico first in situations where there are so many. It doesn't sound unreasonable to her. Your thoughts, Professor?
Yeah, it's a very fair question. On paper, it does sound facially reasonable. The problem is that the conditions in Mexico, the danger of violence is so endemic that to ask people who are already traumatized by the violence they're fleeing from and from the violence they encountered en route to where they now are, to ask those individuals to wait in Mexico during the many weeks or even months that it might take to get a final determination on a Mexican asylum claim with no real prospect of success in the first place just seems disproportionate to any benefit that it might provide.
I'm also wondering, Professor Legomsky, since we have you on the line here, the right is often saying Obama did the same thing and you worked under Obama. He actually deported more people. Can I get a response?
Yeah, I've always bristled at the suggestion that President Obama is somehow the deporter in chief. To say that really requires a whole redefinition of the word deportation. The overwhelming majority of the removals that people are counting as Obama deportations were not deportations at all. They were apprehensions of people at the border while they were in the process of attempting to enter the country unlawfully. A very small percentage of those were people who were actually picked up in the interior and deported, which is the usual meaning of that term. So this is very different. What President Obama was saying, in effect, was it makes a lot more sense, both from a humanitarian perspective and from the perspective of law enforcement efficiency, to stop people from entering in the first place when they don't have a basis for entering, than it would be to divert resources from the border and then try to hunt people down years later when they've established families and other bonds and when it's harder to find them and costlier to deport them. So there were a large number of removals, but the overwhelming majority of those removals were simply apprehensions and turnbacks at the border.
We got seconds left here. Alan Gomez, what should people be looking for with this rule now?
We should be looking to the courts. I think we'll probably have a lawsuit filed by end of day today. In the meantime, there's going to be people on that southern border who are all incredibly confused and have no idea what's happening. So we want to see how quickly they put this into effect and what that federal judge out in California will end up deciding.
Thank you so much, Alan Gomez. Alan Gomez, again, is immigration reporter, USA Today. Good to have you with us.
Thanks.
And thank you, Stephen Legomsky, who is professor at Washington University School of Law and former chief counsel of U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services. Thank you, Professor.
Thank you.
And thank you, our listeners. Another segment of Forum is right up ahead. We're going to actually take up a whole different topic, and we're going to talk about Libra. You know what Libra is? No, it's something in the zodiac, I realize, but it's also a cryptocurrency that Facebook is proposing to put out. Should have a lot of response to that. Think about Facebook now controlling currency as well, or at least cryptocurrency like Bitcoin. That's all up ahead on Forum. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny.